Good afternoon.
So last time, we went over a bit how gRPC's specific design choices for their idea for what a remote procedure call system should have. We saw that they had this sort of design where they kind of used an OO interface where they exposed a local object that would represent functions on the server, called methods of that local object, and it caused a method call to happen on the server. We saw that they had this interface description language where they're trying very hard to be programming language neutral. So because they wanted to like be equally good for C++ and Python, they didn't really look like either of them. And they made this design choice that arguments and return values would always be this struct-like message because they had a way of sort of adding fields to structs and identifying fields and structs that would deal with things being renamed or additional things being added in the future that weren't there now, and so on. Then we talked a bit about how networks fail. And sort of our usual model for how networks fail is that messages are either lost or reordered. And we can handle this generally with acknowledgments to handle messages being lost. We need to get the machine telling us, yes, I got it. And with sequence numbers to handle them being reordered. But even when we're doing this, we can't really be sure if a message was lost or the yes, I got it verifying that the message we received was lost. We can never really tell the difference. And this has implications on sort of our higher level things. If we're using an RPC system and the RPC fails, that doesn't really tell us, you know, whether it actually happened or not. It may have gotten to the server and we just didn't get the response back, or it may have not. We won't know. And for building a distributed system, this is a real problem because this means that when I have failures for some operation I'm trying to coordinate on multiple machines, I can't really know what happened on the other machine and can't deal with that without doing something to resolve that. That just because I didn't get a response doesn't mean that other machine didn't actually try to do something that I need to think about. And in addition to dealing with networks failing, we talked about how machines fail. And we're going to primarily dealing with a machine failure model we call fail stop. That a machine that fails is kind of like the machine gets unplugged from the network. So this means that when we deal with the machine failing, we're also dealing with the network failing, getting to the machine, it looks the same. And you know, this is kind of realistic because as long as we can detect the failure and just act as if the machine isn't there if it's failing, so like, you know, maybe the disk fails in a way other than just stopping working. But if we can just say, if your disk fails, you say, I'm not available, then that sort of follows the fail stop model. We just ignore the machine that is failing. I mentioned that, well, this fail stop model, it isn't what always happens, right? And we could have other models that sort of are maybe more, you know, realistic because, well, things don't just fail by, you know, stopping responding. They fail in other ways, by like having the wrong data. And there's another failure model, which is the other extreme, which is Byzantine failures, where we assume a machine that fails can do literally anything. We'll just choose the least convenient thing for whatever we're doing, and it will do that. And in reality, of course, machines don't fail like by doing the least convenient thing, but they, you know, it's somewhere in between. They don't always fail by just not responding. So, questions on the things we covered last time? Yes?
What machines implement anything between fail stop and
Byzantine? So, question, do machines implement things between fail stop and Byzantine? So these are sort of abstract models for deciding, for like designing like a system. So, right. So like Byzantine failures mean that we're designing the system assuming anything could happen. Of course, you know, anything, you know, we don't have time for everything to happen. But we're designing assuming anything could happen, sort of, as part of how the machine fails. Does that answer your question? Yes. Question, gRPC used? Google at least used to use it internally a bunch for talking between systems in their, you know, distributed systems. Other questions? Okay. So last time when we were finishing, we were talking about distributed transactions. And we had this sort of scenario where we had, say, a course database, which is split across a bunch of machines. And we had some machines with student records. And we said, well, we're splitting up our student records. We have a lot of students. So we're like going to put students A through M, you know, starting with A through M on machine A, students with names starting with N through Z on machine B. We're going to have another machine with course records. And we want to have consistency that we want to agree on which machines, you know, on every machine, like what courses have what students. And this is a problem because, like, if we're retrieving your list of courses you're registered for, we're looking at your student record. If you're retrieving my list of who's in my course, I'm retrieving the course record. And we don't want to make sure that they don't disagree. And let me propose a way of implementing this that we talked last time, like, the naive way won't work. Let's, like, look at more examples of how the naive way won't work. And I'm going to have a specific proposal for doing my add student to course procedure. I'm going to run this code on whatever machine has the records for the student. And it's going to send a message to the course record machine saying, add the student to this course. It's going to wait for a response from C. And once it gets a response to C, it's going to locally add the student to this course. So this is my procedure for adding a student to the course. And let's think about what happens when there's no failures. So if there's no failures, and let's say I'm querying from a third machine, I'm pulling up the sys page for the student and the sys page for the course and checking whether they agree, you know, what they say. And I'm asking for option A, that I pull up the sys page for the student, they're in the course. I pull up the sys page for the course, they're not in the course. I reload both of them, and now they both say they're in the course, or both say they're not in the course. Or B is, I reload both of them, and they still say the same thing. Option C is the opposite. I pull up the student record, and the course isn't listed. I pull up the course list, they're in the list. And for C, I reload, and oh, that changes again. And now they're, you know, both the same, say both in the course. For option D, I reload, and it doesn't change. So I'm asking, which of these scenarios are possible with this sort of naive design? Give you a minute or two. And for this, for so far, we're going to just assume things don't fail, just to keep things simple. Well, we'll worry about failures next. So who'd like some more time? Okay, few people. spin. Who'd still like more time? Okay, so let's say who thinks A is possible? Okay, who thinks A is not possible? Okay, so we have, we're split, okay. How about B? B is possible, B is not possible. Okay, so probably more people will say B isn't possible. How about C? Who thinks C is possible? Okay, C is not possible. Okay, how about D? Who thinks D is possible? Okay, and D is not possible. Okay, so we have, most people say C is possible. So let's start with that one. So C. So I have this now. But basically what happens here is we have some time in between here when if we check what's check the status of things, we're going to find out, oh, you're in a course and according to the student, according to the course record, but not in the course according to the student record. So that's how you got that first scenario. And then we double check, and we could get, you know, so we could check the first time here and the second time here. So that's how C is possible. So that makes sense. So we have this time in between when we set the two records. That's how we can get the contradiction. We check later, they're both set, and then we don't have that sort of contradictory records. So questions on that scenario? Okay, so it turns out that D is also possible. Someone explain, give me, explain how I can modify what happened in C to get the scenario in D. Yeah?
So, the student never passed.
Sorry? So if the student never gets out of locally, here we're assuming no failures. So if the student never gets out, it's something must have failed. So assuming no failures. Can everyone give me? Okay, so there is a reason. And sort of the scenario for two is that we check the first time, the same place, and we check the second time before the local machine gets the response. So there's no failure there, just the network is maybe a little slow. But that's not failing. Worked. Because I said we double check. I don't say we wait long enough. We don't. How would we know how long to wait? We have no way of knowing. We're just double checking. It's just assuming things will change, but we don't know how long we need to wait. We don't have any like reason to know it's going to be long enough. Yeah? Question for C, is it possible for double checking to say that they're both not in the course? No, because if this is the only thing we're doing, right, there's nothing that will undo being in a course. And as for A, I don't think A is possible, assuming we check the student record, then the course record. Because this student record always changes to in course after the course record says in course in this design. Okay, so questions about this scenario. Okay, so this is without failures. So we see that we have kind of an issue with this naive design, where it does something that maybe isn't great in that, especially if the network is slow but works, we can get these sort of contradictory results for a brief period of time. And maybe we'd be concerned for something like a course database, that would be a big problem. So let's think about this. Let's say we have a power loss and a restart of a machine. So one of the machines involved, either the local or the remote machine, or both, lose power and then have to be restarted. I'm asking now which scenarios are possible. Question?
So,
Question, assume there's only one occurrence of power loss. Let's have as many power losses as you want. Question. Are we assuming that it's... You assume that there's read and log. I didn't say anything about that, so if you think that matters, then... Yeah, we should... But that's a good question, right? Because one of the things that matters for this is how we deal locally with the failure, which I haven't specified. So the question is, in without a failure, couldn't scenario A have happened because adding the student to the course remotely was slow? So in this design, we have chosen that we don't add locally until the remote machine tells us it added to the course. A reason, with this sort of justification being like we want to see if the course is full first. But if we didn't make that decision, indeed, we'd have some, this sort of A scenario would be more possible. Anyone want some more time? Question? Yeah?
So if the remote add fails, so if the machine powers off in the middle of waiting for the OK, does it retry adding?
Question, if the machine powers off waiting for the OK, does it retry? Well, we didn't write a way of doing that in our description. So we have a problem. So probably not. OK, so let's start with who thinks A is possible. Thinks A is not possible. Few people. Who thinks B is possible? Thinks B is not possible. Okay, so people are very unsure about A and B. Who thinks C is possible? Thinks C is not possible. Thinks D is possible. Thinks D is not possible. Okay, so C and D are still possible. One reason why? The same thing could happen as happened before. We could just have the failure happen at some irrelevant time, and the same scenario could happen. Also, we could have sort of failures kind of make the situation permanent. So in D, like a lot of you assumed that when we double checked, we wouldn't get the same result because, you know, things were changing. And it could be the case that no matter how, even if we waited long enough, it wouldn't be a problem because let's say I tell the machine to remotely add to the course and then I have a failure. Well, there's nothing to make me remember that I need to locally add it. And that means that I could forever have the course student added to the course in the course database, but never change the student record because there's nothing to make that happen. There's no way to remember after the failure that I need to do that. So another thing which we might be concerned about, so for B, so how is B possible? So there's a question of like, how are we storing things locally? And if we think of what would happen naturally if I wrote a program, when I write to a file, where does that go? And typically where that goes is the cached version of the file. So if we lose power, unless we've done something special, that isn't necessarily stored persistently. So this means that we could have the B scenario, where what happens is the remote machine crashes after we add it, the item, and before it records that in a persistent way. And that could give us the B scenario, where it just forgets about the add because there's nothing to remind it, and it didn't write it down before it responded. And you might say, shouldn't it have made sure that was like written in persistent storage? Yes, but if you want that to happen, you would need to write something special in your program to make sure that happened. If you just write to a file, that's not gonna do it. And A seems a little harder to arrange, right? Because it's saying that we're gonna have, it seemed to be added to the student record first and not the course record. But we can imagine sort of failures doing this with sort of network failures doing this sort of, network reordering causing this sort of thing. So the network could, for example, it could have multiple copies of the message saying to add the student to the course in the network, and we could receive one of them after the machine comes back up, after the remote machine fails and comes back up. So that would be a possibility. So for example, maybe we tried to add a student to the course, the remote machine did that, the acknowledgement didn't get back, the remote machine went down, forgot about doing that, came back up, or did that and acknowledged it, but then it comes back up and it receives an old copy of the message. So that would be a sort of scenario which could happen. Much less likely, though. It seems weird. Lots of weird things need to happen. But now this is a problem when reasoning about this sort of thing, is that, well, you know, if we think of all the things that can happen with like messages being reordered, it's a lot of work to process. So questions about this scenario here? What can happen? Okay, so we're going to want a solution that sort of systematically deals with this problem. And we're going to have a solution that's going to give us distributed transactions. So something's going to happen all at once or not at all. And in this solution, we're going to want every machine to handle its own data. So there's an easy solution that is simpler, where we just put all the data on one machine, and then we don't have to worry about coordinating multiple machines. So we're not going to do that. Also, we want it to be the case that if we have a bunch of machines, machines should only be involved in the transaction if they have something relevant to it. So for example, in our student and course database situation, our student database was split across two machines. If I'm updating a student only on one of those machines and a course only on the course database machine, I shouldn't talk to the other student database machine, right? It doesn't have any data that matters for this. It shouldn't be involved. It shouldn't need to send any messages to it. Also, if I'm updating some student information and not doing anything with courses, I shouldn't need to talk to the course database machine. So you want to make sure that, you know, we can do operations and not involve machines that don't have anything relevant, so we can do them at the same time, take advantage of having multiple machines. Like, that's probably why we have multiple machines in the first place, is that we didn't want to have one machine have to handle everything. And we also want to make progress as long as the relevant machines don't fail. So if one of my student database machines go down, all the students whose data isn't on that machine, everything should still work for them. And ideally, we'd like some solution that will scale like to a huge number of machines. But in practice, even in sort of production, commercial applications of this, typically a transaction, it's going to be like a couple machines with the data. Because even if we have the data across 1,000 machines, like probably any individual operation only involves a few bits of data. So we're going to have a solution that satisfies these properties, and it's going to be called two-phase commit. So as you might guess, there's going to be two phases. The first phase is going to be figuring out what to do. Second phase is going to be actually doing it. And we're going to have this is a similar idea to redo logging. So like we have a step where we figure out what we're doing. In redo logging, we record what we're going to do to the log. And a second step where we actually do it after we finish recording to log and indicated, yes, this is all the steps. And it's going to have a very similar structure, except we're going to have to split it across multiple machines. And like redo logging, we are in fact going to use a lot because we need to have a precise way in which data will be persisted on machines. We need to be certain that machines will remember things that they've decided to do in the past. We can't have the scenario where, you know, I update the course database and the course database machine loses power and it forgets that update it told me it did. So every machine is going to have a log so it remembers what it was doing before failing. This log isn't going to just store all the data of the other machines. It's only storing things that are local, and you know we're going to have multiple transactions, so we're going to mark everything with what transaction it's for. So this is this operation that started. You know, this is what I was doing in that operation. So in the event of a failure, we can read the log and go back to where we were and make sure we don't miss anything. Okay, so I told you we're going to have a persistent log. We're going to have a bunch of machines coordinate. We're going to have two different roles. So we're going to have one machine I'm going to call the coordinator. And the other machines we're going to call workers. I'm going to treat it as if the coordinator is like a separate machine. In practice, commonly, one physical machine will run the coordinator and one of the workers. But just to keep things simpler, we're going to imagine everything's on a different machine. And the key thing we're going to do to make sure we have consistency is that we're going to abort. We're going to not do the entire transaction if anyone decides they're not okay with it. If any machine isn't going to be able to go through. And the coordinator's role in this is the coordinator is going to figure out from all the worker machines, will they abort? And if any of them will, it's going to make a final decision not to do it. Otherwise, it will do, we'll say, commit the transaction, actually do it. So the coordinator is going to get a bunch of votes from workers. If all of them say to commit, the coordinator is going to choose to commit. It's going to choose commit, meaning we're going to actually do this operation. And like with redo logging, once we choose to commit, we're definitely going to do it, even if this involves redoing things after failures. If any worker chooses to abort, if any worker says, I can't do this, we're not going to do the transaction. We're going to choose to abort it. We're going to tell every worker, sorry, we can't do this. Undo it. Don't do it. Hide all the effects. Can't happen. We can't add the student to the course. Sorry. Try again later. If the coordinator doesn't know what a worker wants, the coordinator is going to have the option of choosing, let's just abort. Or, alternately, it can just wait until it gets hears from that worker. Either is going to be fine. So questions about the coordinator's decision? Question, for the unknown case, would the scenario occur if the worker's really slow? Yes, that's a way this could occur. And yeah, and this comes from, remember we said we like couldn't tell the difference between like a failure and like messages being lost, right? This is a side effect of that is that when that's this third scenario here, right? We don't have messages from the worker. Does that mean the worker failed? Does it mean we're just things are slow or messages are just being lost? We can't tell. But we always have a safe decision to make, which is don't do anything. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So we have, you know, ideally, if all the workers are working, we want to actually make progress. But otherwise, you know, we're going to abort if anyone has problems with the operation, or we're going to abort or wait if we can't figure out what everyone wants, meaning that someone might have failed or something like that. So a question you might have is, why would workers ever choose to abort? And sort of the most common reason, the simplest reason, is the operation just isn't possible. So for example, if you say to add to the course and the course is full, they're going to say, nope, can't do that. Or maybe the course doesn't exist, there's something wrong with the operation you're asking to do, can't do that. Or maybe, you know, there's nothing consistently wrong, but the worker just, for some reason, isn't available right now. Like, we're out of disk space. We can't record this operation. we'll just say, sorry, no, try again later. Can't add you to the course right now. There's a more subtle issue, which is when we have two different operations that might conflict. So let's say I have one transaction where my worker, which has the course information, agreed to add student X to a course, but that hasn't finished yet. If they're asked to add student Y to the course, and that would make the course be full, but the first operation would make the course be full, the worker can't actually figure out whether the course is going to be full or we can actually add student Y. So the worker has two ways it can deal with this. So one way is that they can just say, abort the transaction and say, sorry, can't do this now, try again later. Another option is it can wait until it resolves this question of will the course be full before we try to add student Y, and can wait for that to be resolved before it responds. But it can't promise that you can add student Y before it knows the outcome of what's going to happen with student X. And it knows, it said it could add student X, but it doesn't know that it's actually going to happen. So it has to find it out from the coordinator. So questions about this sort of scenario. So why we might want to abort? We have this sort of pending operation. Okay. So this idea of aborting and trying it later, so you might say, how would this work, as far as like me using the system? So common sort of design for this would be that whoever is making the operation would like have some logic that would be hidden from you that would automatically retry. Especially if we didn't do this wait until it's ready operation. Also, another way you can kind of look at this is that this is kind of a manifestation of doing basically locking, right? We're saying that while transaction one's in progress, kind of that course is locked, and transaction two has to wait for that lock to be released in order to proceed. And we have an option of actually just waiting, or an option of saying, you can't get the lock right now, try again later instead of wait. Questions? Yes. Would it be possible for the worker to commit to enrolling unenrolling Y in course A? Yes, and obviously we need something better than a lock to track that sort of conflict. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay. So we've talked about this issue of needing to worry about what if I'm, changing values in ways that, where one transaction would step over the other, where we have to make sure that they kind of take turns, that we don't commit to do two things that are contradictory, even if maybe we're fairly certain that transaction one won't happen because, it's been an hour. But if we agreed to commit it and haven't learned what's going to happen, we have to assume it's going to actually finish. Another issue is that we have the same issue about getting contradictory results for reads. If I read who's in a course while transaction one is happening, I shouldn't see that student X is in course A because we don't know that yet. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. So reads need to deal with this too. And a typical solution when we care about this is that reads should need a transaction too. So even though we're not changing anything, we still need to have everyone agree, I'm going to read this value, and either wait until they can or say no. No, you can't read that value. I don't know what the value is. Try again later. For the upcoming assignment, we're not gonna have full transaction for reads. Instead, your workers are gonna return either here's the value or sorry, the value's not available right now because I don't know what it is for sure. But that's kind of representing that you do a transaction and the worker would either say wait or here it is, depending on whether it was finalized or not. Just like if you're asking, is student X in the course? The worker can't tell you yes or no, because it doesn't know what's really happening. It maybe could tell you something like they weren't in the course before the transaction started, but they can't tell you like right now what the situation is. Okay, questions about reads and consistency? Okay. I guess I should say, this consistency model, this is what you think databases would do, but it turns out that some databases don't actually care about this problem. But if you actually care about being consistent, this is what you do. And some databases do that. Some databases have decided that in this scenario where transaction one is pending, we're okay with you reading the wrong version, wrong value for whether student X is in course A. But we're not going to do that on the assignment. OK, so let's talk about sort of the details of two-phase commit. We're going to go through the protocol at sort of two different levels of abstraction. I'm going to start with sort of at a message level, and then we're going to have sort of like slightly more formal way of looking at it. And a key thing that's going to make this work is that when a worker agrees that it's going to commit a transaction, it can't change its mind. That decision is final. And when a coordinator makes a decision, that decision is final. There's no changing your mind. And this means that we need to remember this decision even in the event of a power loss or something like that. So we're going to need to log this decision before we tell anyone about it to make sure that once we've told anyone, right, it's never going to change. So we're going to write it down in our log before we do anything with it, because better be sure that we've never, ever told someone, you know, do the transaction or don't do the, and then tell someone don't do the transaction, because, well, then we'll have a half-done transaction, which is the whole thing we were trying to avoid. And the worker can't say, I agree to commit this transaction, and then say I don't, because the coordinator might, you know, make one decision based on that first thing and a different decision based on the second thing, and that would be, we want to make sure that can't happen. Okay, so we're going to have our two phases. I'll call the first phase preparing. So in this phase, the workers are going to tell the coordinator their votes. Possibly the coordinator is going to ask for them. Probably it's going to ask for them. They're going to say, I agree to commit or I agree to abort. Then we have the second phase. The coordinator gets all the votes, decides and says, here's what we're doing. We're all doing this operation, or we're all not doing this operation. So in that first phase, either the worker's going to give this promise, I will accept this transaction in the future. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, just that the worker is going to be able to accept it. So this means that if I promise to add student X to the course, that I have to make sure that's possible until I know the transaction is definitely not happening or definitely happening. I cannot, you know, make that impossible later on. We also need to record this promise before we send it out. So we make sure that if we lose power and come back, that we don't do something that contradicts it. Never, ever take it back. And if we've agreed that we're going to accept a transaction, we need to make sure we're acting as if that transaction is going to happen, no matter, you know, what else happens, until we learn for sure it's not going to happen. Some questions about the workers' votes. Okay, so the coordinator, again, going to make a global decision. So the coordinator makes the decision for everybody. So it's going to record it, and it's locked. If the coordinator doesn't have a decision, and it fails, and it comes back, what does it do? It just collects the votes again. We know that the votes are going to be the same each time, because the worker has to log it before sending it. So the coordinator always has the option of collecting votes again if it loses track of things before it actually makes its final decision. So once the coordinator makes the decision, the coordinator is going to tell each worker, hey, I commit. We said commit, and the worker's going to apply the transaction, or it's going to say, hey, we abort. The worker's going to abort the transaction. You might say, well, what if, you know, we abort adding to a class, and there's still room in the class. What do? Just do a new transaction. So we're not going to like resume the transaction. We're going to make a new transaction if we want to do the operation again. And that new transaction is going to have its own voting and its own commit or abort operation. Now, something we need to worry about here is what happens if we don't get hear back from the coordinator. And there's sort of two ways we can deal with this. So one way is the workers, if they don't hear from the coordinator, they can ask for a response again. So they can just say, hey, I'm trying to do this transaction, what happened? And they can keep trying until eventually they get a response from the coordinator, meaning the coordinator isn't down the network unit failure. Another option is that the coordinator could verify that the workers get the outcome. So once the coordinator decides, the coordinator can make it its responsibility to receive a yes, I got it from every single worker. And if it doesn't, or until it doesn't, it could keep sending, did you really get it? Did you really get it to every worker? Option two is what we're going to be doing in the upcoming assignment. It's that you'll have the coordinator, once it makes a decision, it's going to tell every worker, please do this or don't do it, and it's going to make sure the worker says yes, you know, I'm doing it, or no, I'm not doing it, and it's going to, if that doesn't work, it's going to try again later. Questions? Okay, so that's the finishing steps. So questions on... Okay, so let's look at what the operation looks like. So from a message level. So sort of I showed you a high level, let's look at sort of individual messages. So we have a message from the coordinator to the worker saying, let's prepare this operation. This is the will you agree to do this operation, action. And so in this message, we're going to have some identifier. This is the operation we want to do. We're going to have some ID for the transaction. So even if we're doing, you know, two otherwise identical operations, if they're different transactions, we're going to have to distinguish them in every message we send. The coordinator, so the worker is going to reply to this with a agree to commit or agree to abort. And before it does this, it's going to record in its log what it sent. Then the coordinator is going to tell the workers to commit or abort, again, after writing in the log what it's sending. So normal operation. The coordinator tells both workers, prepare this operation. The workers say, okay, yep, I can do that. And they agree to commit, and they reserve whatever resources we need to make sure the operation can happen later on. Then the coordinator decides to commit and sends, you know, based on all the workers saying it can commit, that commit message to the workers, and they actually apply it. And to make this happen, we're going to have some logging happen. So the coordinator, before it sends the prepare, it's going to log, here's the transaction I'm in the middle of doing. Why do we log that? So we can make sure that if the coordinator fails, it can come back and collect the votes again and actually finish this operation. Or at least make the operation not be pending anymore. So if the coordinator comes back, the simplest thing it can do is it can just abort it, but it needs to make sure that we don't like leave this transaction hanging forever. The worker, before it sends that agree to commit, it's going to log, okay, I have this transaction, I agreed to commit it, don't know if it's going to commit yet, so make sure that if the worker goes down, it can check that when it comes back up and still remembers about the transaction. And then we send this commit message, and the worker has actually finished the operation. So questions about our normal operation? Yes.
So you have a system. It's not really about the normal operation, but it's like if you have a system that has availability at all times, is it possible to have a system that has
states? Question, if I have a system that has read availability at all times, is it possible to have this sort of consistency? So I guess so you're saying that we can always read values, but we're changing values. You know, is it possible to have for that to be consistent? And okay, there's some questions here. So if the system never fails, then yes, of course. If all the fate values were changing all on one machine, then sure. Right, then we don't really have an issue. If we have failures, then there's going to be some sort of failure scenario which makes things unavailable. It's just a question of how much needs to fail. Right? And as far as like always being available for reads, sort of there's, if we're always available for reads but can handle things failing, then, we have some questions about what the consistency is what your question is, right? So I guess, and I assume you're thinking, what if we have to coordinate operations between multiple machines? Yeah, so if we don't have to coordinate operations between multiple machines, answer is easy, right? Doesn't matter. And then the question is, can we get inconsistent results? So that we could always like give consistent results for what was the value at some previous time, right? So that's something we could do. And that might be what many systems mean by read is always available, right? You always read a value, but it might not be, but if there's an update in progress, you'll read the old value. So that's something we can easily do. If we want to read the values of updates in progress, well, you can't read that while the update's happening. So if the update's not instantaneous, then kind of by definition, you aren't reading the value being updated. That answer your question? And I would say that there's ideas about what it means to get consistent results, which are much more precise than what I'm presenting, which is, you probably really need to say like what it actually means in specific scenarios. So I gave a very imprecise description, which I'm sure would annoy many database people, because there's more precise ideas than this. But I would note that a lot of databases have very different notions. A lot of databases as deployed in practice do not choose sort of the strongest consistency model for what you read. So for example, a common policy for databases in practice is you will read a value which is committed, but not necessarily the most recent if operations are in progress. Does that answer your question? If you're reading a bunch of values, you might get some of the values might be before and after an operation, if you're reading a table. Okay, so this is our normal operation, and let's say we have a conflict. So if we have a conflict, let's say the worker says, oh, can't do that, try again later. So it can send an abort, the coordinator gets all the votes in this example, and then it says, well, can't commit, so we're gonna abort, tells everyone, undo the transaction. Here I'm showing us it doing it after it gets all the votes. Technically, it could actually do it earlier because, we know that the operation isn't going to finish by then. That's sort of the basic pattern. And as part of this, we need to, record that we decided to abort. The worker needs to record that it decided that it's not doing the transaction. And worker 2 still needs to decide that it reached commit, still needs to record that because it doesn't actually know that the transaction is not going to happen. So questions? The scenario here. Okay, so let's read this question here. So workers can send a vote to abort. So which of these scenarios are okay for a worker to send a vote to abort? So let's say a worker gets a second prepare message because apparently the coordinator didn't receive its response to the first one. Can it send a vote to abort after it previously voted to commit? There, right? We assume the worker didn't get it. The coordinator, apparently, needed to send another prepare message and didn't get the response to the first one. So that's A. B. So after it reboots from a crash, its log said it decided to vote to abort. Can it just send that to the coordinator without waiting for anything? Or it reboots after a crash, didn't get anything from the coordinator, can it send a vote to abort after it doesn't get anything from the coordinator for a while? And D, it sent a vote to commit earlier, but the coordinator's been down for a day. Can we just vote to abort now? So give you some time. Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks A is okay? Thinks A is not okay? Okay, so we can't do A, and so one reason we can't do A is I told you that once we agree to do it, we can't take it back. But is there a reason why, you know, taking it back in this case would actually cause a problem? Someone give me a why we could actually have a problem happen. Like, why do we need that rule here? Yeah.
So what could happen is that it sends a compare message, you go to the commit, and then your first vote got delayed, and then this is a second one. And now if you go to abort, maybe the vote, first vote commit got sent to the abort later. And now it thinks that the transaction is okay. So you just go to the
yeah. So for A, yeah, we cannot do that. And part of the reason is that the coordinator, even though apparently when it sent that second prepare message didn't get our first vote, it could still get it. And so in that case, what would happen is that we would think the transaction is definitely aborting. The coordinator would then tell us to commit it, and that would probably cause us some problems because we wouldn't be planning based around green to commit. And worse things could happen, like maybe the coordinator like restarts, and one instance of the coordinator had our first vote, and one instance has our second vote, and that would be really bad, right? Because that one, those instances could make different decisions, and we really want to avoid that. Yeah, so we can't do that. And remember that just because the coordinator didn't get the message yet doesn't mean it won't get it. And that's why we can't change our decision. Okay. So let's say B, who thinks B is a case where we may abort, may send an abort, thinks B is not. Okay, so we can proactively send stuff to the coordinator. So that's not a problem with the two-phase protocol. In our assignment, it's going to turn out the coordinator is going to send everything, make all the requests to the workers, but that's just because sort of a design decision to make it gradable. Okay. So how about C? Who thinks C is something we can do? D is something we cannot do. So C is something we cannot do. Presumably, like even if we didn't get the decision from the coordinator, it doesn't mean it hasn't made one. So we really can't do that. How about D? Who thinks D is something we can do? Something we cannot do. So it's indeed something we cannot do. So the coordinator, our assumption is the coordinator is going to come back at some point. And when the coordinator comes back, you know, it may have gotten our previous vote to commit. We don't know that, whether or not. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. And we have to assume the transaction will finish that. But this gets to sort of a problem with two-phase commit, which is sort of just a design decision. That we have to wait until we know the outcome. That could be a very, very long time. If a machine goes down and doesn't come back up, maybe there will never be a final outcome. And sort of the two-phase commit answer, what do we do in that case, is we need manual intervention. The protocol is not going to solve it for us. That operation, unless we have some sort of intervention, that's going to be pending forever. And we need someone to figure out, oh, wait a moment, this coordinator is never coming back. We have to abort this transaction, even though we don't know what the real outcome was. So questions on this sort of blocking problem? Okay. So let's talk about this from the coordinator's point of view. So when can the coordinator send a decision? Coordinator doesn't send votes, it sends the decisions to abort. So A is, we have the coordinator crashed, and before the crash, it sent a request to vote to all but one workers and received commit votes from all the workers it contacted, which is all of them but one. Can it abort? For B, and the log indicates the coordinator decided to commit, but the log doesn't say anything about whether workers were contacted. And C, it sent requests to a worker, but didn't get a reply. Can it just send a notification to a board? Okay, so anyone want more time? Okay, so who thinks A is true? Thinks A is not true. So most people say A is true. And yes, so remember, this is this scenario where we're the last scenario here. The coordinator's unsure. It could wait for that response, could try to ask for it again, but it's safe for it to just say, nope, something went wrong. Maybe, or maybe things are slow, but it's safe for it to say, let's not do it. That's going to be consistent. Okay, how about B? Who thinks B is true? False? Okay, so I see B is false. So ordinarily, there's no reason, you know, we don't record this in the log. We don't record this in the log, in log generally. So that's a reason why it's probably not a safe decision. Like, we don't have a reason to believe it should be there. No, maybe if we did, that would be true, but in that case, like, we're not really making our decision until we record we're contacting someone about it. We didn't really make the decision earlier. And how about C? Who thinks C is true? C is false. And C is another sort of example of the scenario with A. We're unsure about what one of the workers are doing. It is safe for us to abort. We can say that, you know, maybe we just didn't wait long enough, and that's sort of a decision that's kind of a quality of service point of view, right? That if we aren't tolerant enough of delays, then we're going to abort when we don't need to. Questions on these scenarios? Yeah.
I understand why the coordinator could abort A, but what's a good reason for
aborting A? Question. You said you understand why the coordinator could abort A. What's a good reason to do that? So probably the best reason to do so I can think of is that it simplifies the coordinator code. And if failures aren't very common, it's my instinct would be when designing a system is try to make the failure recovery code as simple as possible. Because it's not tested very much, and I'm much more concerned about being correct than efficient. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So let's talk about some other sort of other way of viewing this. So sort of I have given increasingly formal descriptions, and typically a way where we describe protocols like this is with a state machine. So we'll track states machines can be in, and a reason we'll do this is that we can make sure that for each state we say, what does every message do? Because a common thing that happens is you don't write down, what should I do if I get a commit message and I haven't voted yet? Like, that's something you should figure out. What should happen in that case? Like, you want to handle all the possibilities. What should I do if I got a vote to commit while I'm the coordinator, and I'm the coordinator and I've decided to abort? Like, we need to, like, make sure we don't miss cases like that. Having a state machine is a good way of making sure we think about this very systematically. So here's sort of a notional state machine for what the coordinator might look like. So we have an initialization state, and we transition into this waiting state. To do that transition, we prepare. We tell all the workers, prepare the transaction. And then we're in the waiting state. If something happens in the waiting state, we redo what we did to get into it. So if the workers haven't given us our votes yet, we send them a prepare again. And eventually, we reach either the aborted or committed states. We reach the aborted state because any worker tells us to abort, or we say, not getting a reply from a worker, let's abort. Or if we get all commits, we can reach the committed state. So sort of in our waiting state, what we're doing actively is we're accumulating votes and we redo the prepare operation we did to get into here if we have doubts about the workers, you know, being able to send a vote. In the aborted state, what are we going to do? We're going to tell the workers to abort again if we need to. In the committed state, we're going to tell the workers to commit again if we need to. So that's sort of our states. So something we need to worry about here is that we have duplicate messages. So part of making the system work is that we're going to be running this for each transaction, and we're going to have like a transaction ID in each message so we know about, you know, if we have old things or new things. And the way our log is going to work is our log is going to tell us which of these states we were in, and we can just go back to doing the sort of operations we had for the state. So what this ends up looking like, if I can make a more complete state machine here, says sort of what we do, you know, within these states. So in the waiting state, if we have a failure or timeout, we stay in the waiting state, but we do this operation of resetting the prepare, or possibly deciding to abort. If we're getting a vote, we store and tally it up and see if we need to go into another state. If we're in the aborted state and I get anything, I tell the worker, oh, no, the transaction's aborted. So if the worker tells me I agree to commit this, what do I do in the aborted state? I just say, it's aborted. Just give them the decision. Similarly, if they tell me I agree to commit this and we're in the committed state, tell them, give them the decision. We're committing it. Some questions? This sort of diagram here. And so this is a kind of way we might reason about what should happen in every state, and also sort of gives us an answer for what do all the messages do. So for the workers, we can have kind of a similar idea that the workers have some initial state where they're waiting for a transaction to start. And when they get a transaction, they either say agree to commit it or abort it. They're aborting it. They're not going to do it. That's why I just have one aborted state, no agree to abort state. And if they're agreed to commit, they either can commit it later on when the coordinator says so, or they might abort it if the coordinator says that. And each of these states, you know, they know whether to resend their votes. So based on what state we're in, we know what vote we've chosen. And that's what we record in the log, is record, oh, I wasn't agreed to commit, or I wasn't aborted, so I know what vote to send back. Questions? Diagram here. So like with the coordinator, sort of our failure recovery is, you know, we're waiting for a prepare to happen, and the agree to commit or aborted states, if something happens, we can always resend our vote. We don't have a final outcome. And if it's committed, we just do the operation again. Make sure. Yeah. So that's sort of a state machine. And in this machine, so, you know, we can sort of expand this more systematically to specify sort of the result of every message in every state. And this is sort of a way we can check that we haven't missed any corner cases. I didn't do that on my diagram for space reasons, but this is sort of one way of kind of checking that we didn't handle anything. Handle everything. Okay, so this is, I didn't get quite this far in the first lecture, as I mentioned in an email, including not just describing the assignment, but we have an assignment coming up where we're going to store a single value across workers. There's a coordinator that sends messages to and from the workers to change values. And the idea is that all workers always have the same value, and that's consistent. That we never have one worker have value A, another worker have value B, if you ask what the worker's values are. Including the worker saying, oh, the value's not available right now, it's being changed. So the assignment is to do that even if failures. And I'll talk more about the assignment on Tuesday. But you should be able to start it, but I'm going to talk more about it. So questions before I... Okay, so that's all I have for today.